I want to provide the users with value before I make them jump through hoops.
Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview successful UX designers who fight for the user in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders. Welcome to episode 19. Today, I had the privilege of talking with an outstanding product designer named Peck Pongpayat. This was a great conversation and my first attempt at a live blab podcast recording. And I'll be honest, it was totally out of my comfort zone for me, but that doesn't mean I won't attempt it again. Peck seemed entirely comfortable, however, and that could have to do with the fact that he's a superhero and a superstar. You'll discover why as you listen to my interview with Peck Pongpayat. Peck Pongpayat is the managing partner at Silicon Valley-based studio Impeccable. He crafts outstanding mobile and web products for clients that include Google, HP, Motorola, and Groupon, to name a few. He's quite the ninja, literally. He's an actual motion capture model in the Mortal Kombat games. He's one of the rare and coveted breeds we would call a unicorn, but he would call a diviner, developer, designer. I love that. One of the things you may not see on his resume and his experience is his experience working as a stock photography model. So thanks for being here, Peck. I'm super excited to have you on the show today.
I'm super excited to be here.
Awesome.
Congratulations on your new kid.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. It's we're so thankful. She's doing well and my wife's doing well, so couldn't be more grateful. I appreciate that.
That's awesome. That's great to hear.
So as you know, Peck, and listeners, we take a superhero approach to the show. It's a fun differentiator, and I'm a nerd. I'm wearing my little Marvel shirt here, too.
Nice.
So I'd like to just take a minute to, you know, every superhero has a secret identity and origin story, and I'd like to talk about yours, Peck. Tell us, why don't you take a minute to give us a look into your personal life?
Sure. So my origin story, so I have a beautiful wife. I have a little beautiful little dog. He's like 8 pounds.
Nice.
We're foodies. We love to walks in the park and walk our dog and hang out. We love films. That's kind of my personal life. I'm sort of a fitness junkie, so I love training. My background is in martial arts. I spent a great number of years, over 15 years, doing Chinese martial arts. So my alter ego, secret identity is I used to be semi-professional at martial arts, and then used to compete regionally and so on. Went to China, competed there, won silver and bronze, which culminated into getting a gig doing motion capture for the Mortal Kombat video games. So I did that for six Mortal Kombat video games, spanning 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I think of Andy Serkis. He's kind of like the poster child of motion capture, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's like the superhero.
Exactly. Yeah. He's done, if you think of mocap, you'll definitely think of Andy Serkis.
Yeah. And it's quite incredible. He's actually a really good actor. I've seen him in other like comedies. I think he was in 13 Going on 30, and he was hilarious in that. Have you ever seen the movie?
It's a fun, cute little
family movie.
But yeah, motion capture, you have to be very expressive. You know, you're basically a puppeteer moving 3D models. And it has to be very expressive.
Absolutely. Do you still do some of that in the motion capture for Mortal Kombat?
No, unfortunately not. I moved to the Bay Area 4 years ago, and then right around that time, I blew my Achilles heel, so that ended my career there. Plus, I had a good run. I did 10 years of that, so no regrets. I think,
Awesome. Why don't you tell us what inspired you, Peck, to pursue a career in this exciting, challenging, and ever-evolving field?
Sure. That goes back to the origin story. I actually have an engineering degree, a computer engineering degree, and I did pretty hardcore just programming for the first half of my career, doing programming coding. Back then was like Visual C++, Visual Basic, ASP.NET, C++ programming. And at one point, the company I was working for sent me to, I got to go to the Adobe Max conference. And they have, Adobe has this team called the Experience Design Team. And I went to one of their sessions, and they were showing, the stuff they were showing was so amazing, so breathtaking. And I realized that that's what I wanted to do. You know, that, like, you can have an impact, much broader impact, bigger impact on the user. You know, all things being equal, like, if, you know, given the table stakes that the product works, you know, the engineering works, that the design and the user experience really had a huge impact, and had certainly had a huge impact on me. And that was also around the time that Apple, you know, started becoming big again and coming back, being very product-centric, product-focused, and design-focused. Yeah. So that all culminated into me realizing that, you know, I really found it more fulfilling to become a product designer than being kind of the guy behind the scenes coding and making it work. So that's...
That's great. Adobe's certainly led a lot of the charge, especially with the products they've created. And So I'm a big fan. I can't wait to try this Comet, this Project Comet prototyping software coming out. So
exactly.
That's great. And I've been inspired as well by some of the Adobe conferences I've attended. So I think that's neat. Peck, who's been the biggest superhero in your work and why?
You know, I hate to use... you know, the tried and true Steve Jobs. He's certainly been an inspiration, and Johnny Ive. But more so, even I think being in Chicago, you can't help but be in awe of this company, Basecamp, 37 Signals.
Oh yeah.
You know, they're Jason Fried and David Heinemeier Hansen. You know, they've certainly been my heroes. Being in the Chicago tech startup scene, the way they've built, you know, such a simple and successful product like Basecamp, and then their evangelism of design and simplicity, bootstrapping and entrepreneurship in general, is very inspiring. So Jason Fried.
Yeah, that's I love that answer, and I really like their philosophies, especially about just really keeping the main thing the main thing. I think at one point they had probably, I don't know how many, but probably half a dozen products easily kind of running around. And I loved how they just kind of switched gears and just said, you know what? Basecamp is what everybody loves. And we could take all this energy we're investing in all these other products that maybe aren't as meaningful and really invest that energy in just this one product. And they believe in the product so much they renamed their company. I love that. They're all in.
Yes. Right? Their focus is unquestionable. Yeah.
That's great. If you weren't doing this for a living, what would be your second career choice and why?
That's a great question. You know, I'd probably do something kind of fitness related. I'm always envious of friends who have, you know, their business kind of incorporate some sort of fitness. I mean, health is something, you know, it's very important to my life, and it should be to everyone's life. You know, having good health is one of the key requirements to everything. Without good health, it doesn't enable you to do a lot of stuff. So if I could incorporate that into my life, my business somehow, you know, I have friends who own studios or fitness studios or like, fitness programs and stuff like that, and it's great because, you know, it definitely is an everyday part of their life, you know, that's just part of their job. So that would be something I'd consider.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And just climbing the hill of 40 right this last year, I have taken on a regiment of exercising. I make it a point, and it's crazy. Like having the baby, I mean, I've been away from work for a week and a half. I've been away from the treadmill and everything, and we've had our mothers have been here to help. And so 2 weeks have gone by without me doing any sort of fitness. I feel it, man. So, but 2 days in, I just started 2 days ago, and I already feel way better. And it's so critical. And especially with the work we're doing, with having an entrepreneurial mindset, having clarity, all of the exercise really lends to that. And also caring about people. I talked about this with Rachel Andrew on her episode, and just about fitness. She's also very fitness minded as well. And just about how when you care about when you feel good about yourself, you really have more capacity to care about others, I believe.
Yes.
That's cool. Awesome. Let's talk about life-altering experiences and get into your transformation, Peck. So every superhero has some sort of life-altering experience that helps guide their purpose and leads to a transformation where they realize the powers they have and they harness them for the greater good. Certainly significant among those is failure. Now, failure is not something we like to talk about. It's not something we want to put on our LinkedIn page, but it's unquestionably one of life's greatest teachers. Now, can you tell us a story about what's been the biggest one in your career?
Sure. Well, you know, I failed so many times, it's hard to keep track of all my failures. So my entire career is probably littered with the corpses of failed products I've designed and created. One failure that I feel like I've had is, you know, just the culmination is like I've created so many products, and one big failure to consider is like I failed to create a successful product that's my own. You know, I've created products we've helped for other people, you know, like our clients like Google and Motorola and stuff, but I've yet to create one that's we've gotten some press around stuff and we've gotten some recognition for some of the products we've created, but to create a sustainable, viable product that people love and use and are willing to either support or pay for, or advertisers are going to support, something like that has still eluded me. So in that sense, I consider that a failure in my part, but that I'm trying to strive towards and keep doing to this day. We launch products and stuff all the time. But that said, I think it's, you know, it takes more than just great UX to create a great product, right? Like there's marketing, there's engineering, you have to build and manage teams, you know, you have to think about app store optimization. If it's a mobile product, you have to think about SEO. You think about growth hacking. There's a lot of hustle and luck involved as well.
That's absolutely true. And I like that you said that about product, making a great product. It's a lot more than just creating something sexy on the screen, right? It's actually solving problems and creating something that people need and that makes their lives better. Yep. I think that's sort of the holy grail. And I actually, it's funny, I was looking at your work and by the way, I'm blown away by the work you guys are doing. It's absolutely.
Our team is amazing.
Yeah. You guys are doing incredible work. And I got a quote here that I want to share that I think is really relevant to you and your studio, what you guys are doing. You know, the whole form over function over form kind of thing. A lot of people seem to only be able to really capture one of those really well. And of course, the Holy Grail is having both. But I love this quote from Frank Lloyd Wright. He says, "Form follows function. That has been misunderstood. Form and function should be one, joined in a spiritual union."
That's a great quote.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Made me think of you guys.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Absolutely. So, now this is a fun one. Do you have a story of something really crazy or super awkward that happened during user testing?
Sure. Nothing super crazy, but one guy who came to a user testing session was actually trying to get a job with us. So he kept asking about hey, do you have a job for me at our company? So it made for a very awkward session because, you know, you're trying to just like, hey, this is, you're going to get like a $20 gift card after all this, but, you know, I don't think we have a job for you. In retrospect, I think that's a brilliant strategy to get inside a company because, I mean, how else are you going to get would a total random stranger get into a building or a business, right, without any connections?
Yeah.
So that guy was that was his hack for getting into companies, was like signing up for all these user sessions, like, hey, you have a job for me? That was very interesting.
That's great. You got to admire his tenacity.
Exactly. You know,
and his creativity. Yeah. It's funny. I interviewed Josh Clark, and one of the stories that he told was about how a homeless guy wandered into their user testing session. And I think he was really kind of wanting to get some cash out of it because he kind of needed it.
Yeah.
But they were just giving out, like, American Express, some kind of card thing.
Right.
And he's like, hey, man, do you think you could help me out here? I thought it was a great story. I was like, man, I admire him trying to do something to better himself, you know. And
right.
So that's great. Great. Peck, what's your design superpower?
Great question. So I think my power is design pattern recognition. So the ability to find the right design pattern to solve the problem at hand. So many inexperienced designers think that, you know, their work, their design needs to be original in order to be good or useful. What people don't understand is design is like, to me, is like a language, and you must understand the structure and the grammar of the language. So, for example, you would never put the back button on the bottom right corner of an app, or you wouldn't put the next button on the top left corner. You just don't, because it just wouldn't make sense. So using established design patterns people are familiar with, you don't have to try to be original, because people, you know, there's ways to innovate, but then there's things that people take for convention. And when you don't follow that convention, you know, if I start, you know, in the English language, if I start moving, you know, the orders of nouns and verbs and, you know, adjectives around, then it comes off as weird, and I don't know that language. And in that sense, you know, people who try to be original and move stuff around and break the design language, you know, they're losing that. So my superpower is, you know, I just download so many apps and play with so many apps, or at least I used to. Now, you know, that's something I impart on my designers, is you know, just having that huge library in my brain of, oh, you know, we've done this before, or we've seen this pattern. You're trying to do X, so here's some great design patterns from successful companies who've done this, stuff like that.
That's a great superpower, and for sure, usability. I mean, if we create something that's really visually interesting, but people can't use it, we've not really succeeded. So I totally agree with you. And I have such a tug of war for me, because I feel like I totally agree with you. And I think style patterns and recognizable patterns are incredibly important. However, I feel like we begin to get to a place where so much looks the same, where it's like, how are new conventions created, kind of thing? Like, what's the balancing act of that? I don't know the answer to that. But it's one of those things. But I completely agree, and I'm fully on board with you on style patterns, recognition, usability. But then there's that, how do we kind of go that extra, just a little extra step to kind of break out of the box, even if we're creating something new that takes time for people to learn. That's the whole discoverability aspect, I think, that Donald Norman talks about when products are created. It's kind of, and Apple's really great at that. They don't ship their phones or their tablets with a manual. A lot of it's super intuitive on the front end, but then there's all these Easter eggs, there's all this discoverability. I think that's kind of, maybe that's sort of what I'm getting at, is what's the balancing act of that?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, innovation doesn't happen in a vacuum. I think it comes when you take something that works well in one area and then apply it to a totally new, different area. So take example the really cool thing, the MagSafe power cord plug on the Apple laptop. So that wasn't invented by Apple, right? That was, you know, Japanese rice cookers had that because, you know, they don't want you to. It's a great idea, right? Like if you have a rice cooker and you trip on the power cord, you could potentially burn yourself or seriously injure yourself. Yeah. So by having that MagSafe power cord, you just kick the cord out and, you know, the rice cooker shuts off, whatever, but everyone's safe. So Apple took that and applied it to computers and laptops, because, you know, the last thing you want to do is trip over a power cord and drag that $3,000 piece of equipment down from the desk.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I love how there's so much inspiration that's been taken from even industrial design with kind of what we're doing today. So I think that's awesome. Peck, what's your design kryptonite?
My design kryptonite is typography. I'm not able to perceive nuances of various types at all. I just don't live in that world. I'm about as sophisticated with typography as I'm about with wine. So, you know, I know the difference between red and white wine. You know, I know that. So just like I know there's like sans serif and serif, you know, I know some wines are sweeter, some wines are tartar. So like, you know, there's like certain big things I'll notice about the type. But other than that, you know, like the kerning, like all that stuff, you know, like I just can't really tell. So when I have to deal with typography, I call upon my other superhero colleagues who have that superpower.
Nice. Yeah, that's where I was going in my mind. The work you guys are doing is beautiful, and a lot of great typography. And so that's the thing about being an entrepreneur and being a leader. You don't have to do everything yourself, right? You surround yourself with other people who are really talented and follow your lead, and they can bring those strengths, right?
Yeah, it's like the Justice League.
Nice. Love it. So I want to ask you, and by the way, great reference, DC, you're a DC guy, I would take it. If you weren't, then your appearance in Dark Knight, he was in Dark Knight, by the way. An extra.
I was an extra.
It's pretty awesome.
If you were a warm body in Chicago at the time of filming, like just about everyone I know was in Dark Knight. So that's not a big bold claim.
Well, I'm going to make sure I look for you next time I see it. My son and I love the trilogy. So
awesome.
So this next question. I know, and this is a great segue because we were just talking about your great team and the wonderful work you guys are doing. Obviously, you didn't get there on your own, but you have certainly achieved a great level of success in your career, Peck. And I just want to say, what would your UX design superhero name be?
So I don't see myself as having any superpowers. So I'm more like John McClane from Die Hard, you know, figuring things out as I go and, you know, using what I have at the given time, you know, like, hey, ho, 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 now I have a machine gun. I don't have the power.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay. Bleep. I don't have the power to order, you know, like an artillery strike, like a user study. Like if the client doesn't have the budget for it, they don't have the budget. I don't have infinite resources like Bruce Wayne or Tony Stark to arm myself with gadgets and enhancements. So in that sense, I see myself more as like Kick-Ass. just a guy in a costume who's like, you know, with the will to kick some design ass.
Nice.
So my superhero name would be something like Get Shit Done, or GSD for short.
Okay. Excellent. So, Peck, one of my favorite lines from Tron was when he said, "I fight for the users." How do you fight for your users?
So, my design philosophy is I always aim to reduce friction in design. So any roadblocks, speed bumps, or potholes, you know, use whatever analogy, I try to remove that stumbling block for the user. So if a business comes to me and says, you know, hey, I want to design this app, and then, okay, you know, it's a business app, so they have to, like, fill 20 pages of register onboarding. Like, so I ask, well, what do you really need to register? What's the bare minimum? Can they even find derived value before you even register? So I want to provide the users with value before I make them jump through hoops. So I'm always thinking, okay, you know, or like, hey, if this is a major feature, you know, and it takes 3 clicks, can I do it in 2? Is there a way to simplify this? Can I fill less forms? You know, like if something is important, you know, I question why it's buried, or it's, you know, if it's small, or, you know, kind of in a, some bottom corner, you know, so like, oh, here's a financial app, and my net worth is like, I have to scroll all the way to the bottom of the page. It's like, well, so that's interesting. Why is my net worth all the way to the bottom? You know, if that's so important, then you might want to put it up the top. For example, yeah. So we just had that discussion yesterday.
Nice. I'm doing some research on Zeldman because I have the privilege of interviewing him on Monday, which I don't know how that happened, but he said yes. But anyway, one of the things he said, which I think supports your answer quite well, is let's see, something about design that doesn't serve people doesn't serve business.
Right.
So I think that points to exactly what you were saying, I think, in many ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's give and take, right? Like a business, you know, who comes to us wanting a design of a product, and all they have is ask of the user, or take, and like what value are you providing first? You know, is there like, can you provide some value first before you take? Or, you know, there's give and take.
I love that. I hate when I land somewhere and then there's like all these asks for me. And it's like, I don't know who you are. Like, why should I like you on Facebook? Who are you? And what value, what's in it? Michael Hyatt says, people listen to WIIFM, what's in it for me? So I think that's just basic strategy and basic business. It's like, you need to provide value before you ask. And as Gary Vaynerchuk says, jab, 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 right hook, right?
Yeah, right.
So that's great. I love that. So this is the last question of this segment, but it's a big one, and it's one of my favorites. And I can't wait for your answer because I know your head is completely in this zone about the future. Now, Peck, what does the future of UX look like to you?
So the future of UX will not be limited to just phones and smartwatches. So like TV interfaces have only begun to innovate. So there's audio interfaces are also very nascent. So, you know, Google, Apple, Amazon have all just started to get into these appliances that you can talk to and listen to you. And then other appliances and common devices like refrigerators and washing machines are only now starting to become internet-enabled. And so we're just starting to scratch the surface of how we will interact with them. And you know, the field of like now that you can interact with a device where they don't have to be present, you don't have to be there to push the button. You can talk to it remotely via mobile phone or smartwatch or you know an audio interface like the Amazon Echo. What's possible there? So and then in the not so distant future, we will also have these self-driving cars. So those two will usher in a new era of interaction now that you no longer have to like pay attention to what you're doing, you're driving. You don't even have to face the front, right? The dashboard and look at the wheel. So all those will require new modes and expertise and not just in mobile. So the future UX designer will have to develop all these expertise in whole new areas.
Deep, man. I think a lot of us want cars so we can text while we're driving. Yep. The drivable, self-drivable cars.
Yeah.
No, yep. I don't know. Yeah. No, I can't wait for that because I hate traffic. But the other thing is the refrigerator. We've been talking about that for 10 years. I'm sure some companies are starting to do that. I still don't understand the use case exactly for a smart refrigerator.
Cool. I think there are some. You know, take the example of food waste. You know, everybody does this. You know, we buy stuff with good intentions, and there's a lot of food waste. So somebody in the chat here mentioned IoT devices. Yeah. So I would categorize a refrigerator as a big IoT device if it was enabled, internet-enabled, right?
Sure.
So you could say, for example, like when you go grocery shopping, you know, and it has all your data, you know, maybe you paid via, like, you know, Apple Pay or whatever, and let's just imagine that you know something of yours knew what you purchased, and now you put it in the fridge. A smart refrigerator could tell you that, hey, you know, you might want to think about, you know, that strawberries have a shelf life of X days. You have your lettuce, and yeah, so it could inform your cooking decisions because oftentimes, you know, you cook what's on your mind, and then you realize, oh, well, that's going to expire first, but now it's too late. It's kind of starting to spoil. Or it could inform you that, you know, something's, you know, getting low, and then maybe you hit a button, and it'll add it to your grocery list or maybe just order it for you. A great movie that illustrates that was an old movie called Sixth Day, Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. Okay. There's a scene where there's a smart fridge where, you know, his milk was running out and he just hits a button and, you know, get new milk or something.
Okay. I'm sold. You've convinced me of that. That's really great. And I mean, people are shipping coffee cups that tell you, I don't know what they tell you, but I guess how hot your beverage is, and I don't know, maybe where the coffee came from. That'd be interesting, wouldn't it, if it could detect region? So anyway, that's great. Peck, let's wrap up the show with the imparting of superpowers.
Yeah.
So what's one habit that you believe contributes to your success?
You know, I think it's listening to people. So the best, most important tool for UX designer is to talk to the actual customers, talk to the users, and observe them. You know, there's nothing quite like, you know, you may be so proud of all that stuff you put in, but there's nothing quite like watching users struggle with your product. Really open your eyes to how full of assumptions your designs are. Putting your product in the hands of users and lay people, not as even, you know, the users that fit your demographic, just lay people, and if you do that over enough, you will be an invincible UX designer.
Love it. The power of observation is, I think, one of the greatest UX superpowers that we can apply. There's no mistaking when you actually are watching somebody use your product or struggle with your product, especially. It can be very humbling, but very enlightening.
Yes.
And we need that as designers, I think.
Yes.
Peck, what's your most invincible UX resource or tool you can recommend to our listeners?
Let's see. For me, because my superpower is the design pattern is it's just being aware of there are all these design pattern sites, and then just downloading a bunch of design patterns. That is my biggest resource that I use and go back to all the time. You know, it's almost like basics and knowing grammar really well and kind of being aware of that and seeing how others are using, you know, applying different design patterns or new design patterns and stuff like that. So being aware of design pattern sites or just plain old checking out design patterns of new and upcoming apps all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Design patterns are so helpful because there's a few reasons. The main one is, one of the main ones is you can actually show the client sort of where you're going. Like style tiles, for example, are really helpful in the pitch process, where you can just present elements instead of a complete. You remember how we used to spend weeks on a pixel perfect Photoshop picture of a website?
Yep.
Now we can actually save a ton of time by just throwing some elements onto a screen and showing that. But it also allows us to not have to reinvent the wheel every time, right, on every project, because nobody has time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that, right?
Ain't nobody. Right.
So anyway, that's great. Peck, if you could recommend one book to our listeners, what would it be and why?
I love the book Don't Make Me Think by Steve Krug. Mm. And actually, we make every one of our designers read that if they haven't already. It's a quick read, concise, very easily digestible. I mean, I read it on a plane. You know, it's that thin, like a one plane ride from one coast to another. So I highly recommend that book, especially for anyone who's like interested in this field, or just a new UX designer starting.
It's great. Confession, I've had the book since the 90s, late 90s, and I have not gotten through it. I know, throw stones at me. But I started taking time to do that because you're probably the fourth guest that said that book and the answer to that. So I started taking time to go through it. My pages are falling out, like from the binding.
There's a new edition now, so we got the newer edition.
Nice. No, I'm loving it. I'm halfway through it, and I'm loving the book. And even though it was written a long time ago, and even the second edition, I'm sure he didn't rewrite everything, but it's just so many principles just are timeless in that book.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Excellent. So Defenders, there's a great book to read if you haven't, like myself already. Sheesh. Sorry. What's your best advice for aspiring UX design superheroes?
Practice your craft. Staying hungry, reading, work on side projects, and that goes in hand with practicing your craft. Don't just do the work. Don't just do the work you're given. Do the work you want to do, and you can. And if you're not given that work, consider just doing it as a side project, and don't wait for people. We have web designers who want to get into mobile. Well, nobody's going to give them a mobile project until they show their chops. And the only way to get that, if nobody's giving that to them, is to just start designing mobile apps and then getting outside your comfort zone, for sure. Get outside the building, talk to people. It's very can be very uncomfortable to talk to people if you don't have confidence in your product. But the only way to get good is to show your work and get feedback and be criticized. So that would be my advice.
I can't add anything to that, man. That's a great answer, and I'm totally on board with that. And just build stuff, right? Just find something you want to do. Find a problem you want to solve. And I think some of the greatest products have actually been born from that philosophy, right? Like seeing a need. And you were, I got to tell you, man, you were so great at that. Just seeing a need, seeing even something that exists, but how can it be better? That's what Apple's done pretty much. How can this be better? And just doing it, not waiting for permission. Give yourself permission to do that, Defenders, right?
Yes. Awesome. Don't ask.
Yeah.
Take it.
Don't ask. Just do it. practice it. That's awesome. Stay hungry, stay passionate, inspired.
Hi, I'm David Demery. I'm a product manager for Adobe Typekit. I'd fight for the users, and you're listening to the User Defenders podcast with Jason Ogle.
Peck, this is a listener question that somebody, his name is Farshad, he sent over on Twitter. His handle is at Farshad A-T-I-S. So F-A-R-S-H-A-D-A-T-I-S.
Hi, Jason. First of all, I have to thank you for this amazing podcast. My name is Farshad, and I have a question for your guest, Peck. I'm a user experience designer and see a lot of product designer job postings these days, which their job description is very similar to UX design positions. I'd like to know what are their similarities and differences, and how can a user experience designer become a product designer? Thanks.
It is. You know, our field now is so nuanced, and, you know, there's so many roles now, right? Like, you know, there's interaction designers, there's UX designers, there's visual designers, there's front-end developers, and all that gets even, you know, confused at times. You know, I'll read resumes or job postings for a UX designer, but then the requirement will be, you know, CSS, SAS, and, you know, whatever. Yeah, Node, and like that doesn't read like a UX designer, but you know, people are like expecting these different things. I think if you get to a bigger organization, you have these separate roles and disciplines. If you get to a smaller organization, you know, some people, so like we don't have a distinction between a visual designer and a UX designer. To us, you know, we don't have separate roles for that because we're such a small organization. You have to be able to be a jack of all trades and do both. In terms of product, what I think the difference between a product designer and a UX designer, a product designer probably comes from the actual term and title probably comes from, you know, the industrial design, manufacturing, where there were physical products to be designed. Probably, you know, the term UX didn't exist in that realm. And then as digital and physical products merge, you know, titles kind of merge. But if there was a distinction, I'd probably think product designers think more. It's, you know, a UX designer is a subset of a product designer, where a product designer may have to think about other things as well. They may have other considerations in terms of maybe, you know, the business, the budget, the team, the marketing. You know, just a product overall and not just the UX. Yeah.
Great answer. This episode is brought to you by Universal Mind, a digital design and consulting company based in Denver, Colorado. Whether you started as a digital company or not, we're all digital now, and that's been a tough transition for many organizations. Universal Mind helps mid to enterprise-sized companies find and deliver something valuable through design thinking workshops, UX design, and development consulting, and believes in supporting user defenders to help train and inspire the next generation of designers. Learn more at universalmind.com. Now, as we close, Peck, can you tell us about one thing you're working on that you're most excited about?
Oh, boy.
If you had to pick just one thing.
Just one thing. One of the most exciting things we're working on right now is a drone research project.
Oh, wow.
So, we some of our team members have joined, did the launch hackathon that's going on right now. We finished top 20, and then we qualified to the top 5. Twitter gave us some award, and you know, the team members got Apple TVs, and wow. We're now going to launch demo this drone project in front on stage later today. So that's where I'm headed after that. So that's one of the most exciting things. But where I see drones right now is, it's very similar to like early, you know, for parts of it, you know, early PC days where you can assemble your own PC. You know, right now you can buy the parts and assemble your own drone, and then controlling it is really hard too. You know, you have two joysticks, you know, and you buy yourself an $800 drone, you know, you run the risk of really burning through that money, or even a $3,000, you know, there's $3,000 drones even, you know, there's a reason you call it drone piloting, because you have to have some dexterity, you have to have some hand-eye coordination, you know, there's two joysticks that you have to use. So drones, in my mind right now, the analogy is, it's like where computers are when they were the command line interface. you know, you can DIY it. You have to learn and get good at the syntax and the skills. So you have to know that. But drones aren't where, like, computers are with at the smartphone phase. You know, a smartphone, a two-year-old can do this. Mm-hmm. You know, if I hand a drone controller to a two-year-old, they're most likely crash it. And, you know, and where I think, if, you know, I think the vision is to make, for me, is I want to make, one thesis is I want to make drones accessible to everyone. You know, like, I want to be able to, like, hand something, whatever that interface is, to a layperson who doesn't have the dexterity to control a drone, for them to be able to operate it safely, efficiently, and get value out of it.
That's fascinating. Yeah, that's like so. That sort of technology is so futuristic, right? We've just scratched the surface, like you said, and it's neat that you guys are kind of leading the charge in some of that stuff. And all this talk about Amazon dropping packages same day, that's pretty fascinating to me.
It is.
Although out here in Colorado, we'd probably shoot them down. Just kidding.
And get packages out.
What is that? What is that, camera? No. But I love the idea. I think that's fascinating. And I'm not surprised. I wouldn't be surprised to see that coming forth very soon. So very exciting stuff. We'll have to keep tabs with you on kind of where that's going.
Thank you. Yeah, we're very excited.
Awesome. So as we close, Peck, why don't you tell our audience the best way to connect and to keep up with you?
Sure. You know, I'm very accessible. I can be reached via email. So that's peck@impeccable. And we'll make sure Jason has the info. My Twitter handle is just my first name and last name, peckpongpat. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn as well. So I'm a pretty, you know, hip to the social medias. so I'm on, you know, LinkedIn, Twitter, emailers still respond. And then I'm also Instagram if you want to follow my food and fitness shenanigans. That's just Peck on Instagram. So
awesome. Foodstagram.
Instagram, yeah. I'm one of those people.
All right. Cats? Catstagram?
Yeah, my dog.
Okay.
My dog.
Awesome. Yeah. That's great, man. So I usually will just end right here by with a thank you, and I will in a second, but I want to acknowledge the Blab folks that are here. Thank you for joining us. This is the first attempt at this, so sorry for the squeaky gears here. I'm working it out, but Peck, thank you for your patience and being willing to do this, to kick the tires the first time with me on this.
This is fun.
It has been fun. It's neat to be able to look in your eyes, to look at, you know, to see, this is the first time for that. I like the engagement factor, and I appreciate folks that are listening, that are tuning in. Thanks for doing that. Hope to do more of this. I think I will. This has been great.
Awesome.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here, Peck, and taking time out of your busy day. It's been a great pleasure for me to have you, man. I can't wait to share this episode with the folks that weren't able to be here. And I just want to say fight on, my friend.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Jason. I'm happy to be here.
Really enjoyed my talk with Peck. I love talking to designers who are always searching for how to improve things and actually doing it without waiting for permission or to be picked. I took away a lot of inspiration from Peck and his GSD methodology, and I hope you did too, Defenders. Listen, if you're enjoying the show, would you take a minute and leave a rating and review on iTunes? It only takes a couple minutes, and it helps the show a great deal, and I just want to thank you in advance for doing this. I want to thank Cesar Limas for the astonishing superhero artwork, Chris Combs for the superhuman editing, and Wyman Gentry for the compelling show music. Thanks again so much for listening, and until next time, fight on, my friends.